This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Back to your phones. As promised, Tom and Everett on Brady. Go ahead, Tom. Tom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
I got Brady. You're talking, Mads, he's bad mouthing Brady. He forgets all the years we weren't in playoffs. Every year we can count on being there.
So you should never criticize Brady?
It's not that you should never criticize him. It's just if you're my age, you don't forget where, you know, when you sat there with no, you weren't in the playoffs.
Hey, Tom, don't act like Mads is 16 years old, man. He's old too.
No.
He's old too, and you grew up in this crap.
Listen, trust me, I haven't forgotten. If you really want to go down that road, I think a lot of you have forgotten what it was like. But let's leave that aside for another day.
Why do you think people have forgotten what it's like?
Because I think spoiled.
Yeah, the Patriots fans are like, again, you know, I use the term nouveau riche, right? All of a sudden you hit the lottery, you get all this money, and so what do? You turn into a rich a-hole is what you do, instead of remembering what it was like. And so instead of being cocky and arrogant, you just accept the reality that right now you got it pretty good, but there's probably going to be another shoe to drop someday. That's just the way life works.
But is Maz being too hard on Brady? Probably so. But I think Maz is too hard on everyone. John in Andover. Go ahead, John, on the Bruins.
Yes, fellas. So, talking about Tampa Bay and their record here in Boston, you know, there's got to be a couple elements to it. Obviously, you know, historically speaking, probably doesn't make a darn bit of difference. It's a different team. But there's got to be something to be said about playing in Tampa Bay for the good majority of the year, right? You come up to an original six, you know, fan-based crowd in the playoffs. I know a lot of these guys are Canadian. They play, you know, there's 10,000 at Packer Stadium for a high school game. There's got to be something to be said for playing up here after, you know, a snooze fest down in Tampa all year. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it you know, I would say yes.
Actually, I mean, that's they're one of the bigger draws in the NHL.
What, the Lightning?
The Lightning, yeah. They bang that place out pretty much every single game.
In Tampa?
It's not like Florida.
Well, but they do have a thing with opposing fans where they got to limit your – you can't wear opposing jerseys in some sections and whatnot, and it's
yeah, maybe it's too much of a safe space for them.
Murray, it's much better than the Florida Panthers, but Tampa deals with a little bit of that too. Look, it's not a going north thing. This is a franchise that's won a cup and went to a cup finals 3 years ago. So don't tell me like every time they go to an original six city or come up north, they're a puddle. It's just here. For some reason, they've historically had a hard time here, even recently. So maybe that's to your advantage. And, you know, Stamkos was around for all of that, for a lot of it. Hedman's been around for a lot of that. So who knows what that is? And usually home ice doesn't matter in the NHL, but maybe this time it does. And you know, maybe the Bruins try and make it so.
I wouldn't rely on that if I were the Bruins.
Neil and Rockland, go on the Pats.
Yeah, I got to take one and take one H. Just let me get them in, boys.
Gotta be quick.
On that rumor of the trade-up to the Giants, I think Belichick might have put that out there to tell Tom to get back in line. We could trade for a quarterback at any time. And okay, take one A is Kraft. He might be not too happy with Brady, too. So all he's got to say, is that true, Robert? And he goes, well, I put him back in charge of personnel.
So I had a hard time understanding what he said. Do you think the Mayfield rumor was something to motivate Brady?
It crossed my mind today. It did. It crossed my mind today.
Haven't we agreed it's beyond that now? Like, there's no – it's
– Yeah, what would he care at this point? Because now I feel like Brady actually sees the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, okay.
Not over the Garoppolo.
I mean, he just said, I've negotiated two years with Giselle. So he's not – he's not hanging on for his – he's not trying to fight for his job 3-4 years from now.
Okay, but you yourself had said before the draft, if they trade up and grab a quarterback, that's a finger to Brady.
It is, because you're taking away things that – I mean, as it is, they've drafted him an offensive lineman and a running back who can help him.
Sure.
If they use those picks to package up for a quarterback, nothing's helped him.
Right. So maybe at the very least they wanted Brady to know that they were ready to give him the finger.
I see.
Like, you know, it crossed my mind today.
Okay.
I'm not saying I totally believe it, because I have a hard time believing they would have given up the alleged package necessary to move up to number two.
Oh, I don't think they would have given up the alleged package necessary, but I don't think it was a feign. I think they liked Baker Mayfield, probably especially Josh, as a lot of teams did. A lot of teams, as the process played out, a lot of teams settled on him as being clearly the guy, and the Patriots did too. And maybe the Patriots were operating under the assumption that, well, we've figured it out, no one else has. unfortunately, everyone else did, right? Everyone else did, but I think they liked him. I think they legitimately liked him. Let's do John in Alston. Hi, John. Hello, John. Okay, babe, you can call us back. You know the number. Frank in West Roxbury from Mass. Go ahead, Frank.
I don't understand this. You're blaming Brady for forcing the Garoppolo trade, but even if he did go to Kraft and say, get me out of here, I don't want him playing under me, that's on Kraft for making that move. And then, furthermore, it's on Belichick for making an off trade. I mean, every superstar is going to, they don't want the successor right behind them. I mean, that's not, you can't really, you can say he's a prima donna a little bit for feeling that way, but it's on Kraft and on Belichick for making an awful trade.
Frank,
not on Brady.
Frank, I agree with you 100%. 100%. It's not Brady's fault for fighting for his job. It's Kraft for giving in and buying it.
Right. Just don't tell me, though, that you ignore the noise. That's all. I told you, the thing that what irritated me was the comment. So, because he's right. Kraft, ultimately, to me, that thing falls largely on Kraft because Belichick wasn't going to trade him. So Kraft forced the issue because Brady was chirping in his ear. Meanwhile, Brady's trying to say, well, I don't concern myself with outside things. Sure you do. Sure you do. Of course you do, because you're a human being.
Carlton in Tampa joins us. Hi, Carlton. He wants to join the Palace Queue. Hi, Carlton.
I want to cheer up Maserati and Catboy today. So Maz is all out of sync because he sees that the San Francisco 49ers are now have the seventh best chance to win the Super Bowl at 14-1, seventh best. But Maz, the galloping chicken's going to be an epic bust, and then you'll be happy that they got rid of him, okay? And I want to cheer up Catboy. You know, on ESPN, there's this discussion of who's most responsible for the Patriots' success, whether it's Brady or whether it's Belichick. Well, I predict that the moment that Tom Brady either retires or gets traded by the New England Patriots, it's Bill Belichick that's going to fall off the cliff. He's the one that's going to revert to his 18 wins and 19 losses self with the New England Patriots without Tom Brady as his quarterback, or his 9 games under 500 NFL record without Tom Brady as his quarterback. You know, he's the bonehead who actually sat a $61 million cornerback and watched the Eagles go up and down the field scoring on 8 out of 10 possessions this last Super Bowl, costing Tom Brady his 6th ring. And maybe after this year, because I think if this is the last year of these two guys together, Bill will go back to Cleveland and replace Hugh Jackson and get the coach, Baker Mayfield, and try to resurrect his epically losing record with the Cleveland Browns.
I like it, Carlton. Do you feel better now, Jim?
I do, yes. It's always a pleasure to hear from Carlton. It is.
I'm glad Carlton stuck with his anti-Garoppolo thing because, Carlton's the ultimate Patriot hater and, if you're that guy, you want Garoppolo to do well because it makes the Patriots look worse, like Mass. It blows up in the Patriots' face, and I'm joking.
No, I'm defending my take.
Yeah, no, but right. But, you would think that Carlton would say that Garoppolo's going to light it up because it would make the Patriots look bad. But no, he's sticking to it. The galloping pick chicken. He does not think he's going to be very good.
Want to make Catboy feel better.
Jack and Peabody. Hi, Jack.
Good afternoon, guys.
What do you got?
I called about the Bruins. I want to make one comment on the whole Brady thing, though. For myself personally, I have trouble sort of looking into some of the relationships that are out there among professional athletes in the organizations because we don't live in that type of world. The employment and the places we work, there's a certain degree of discipline and expectation, and you go where you're supposed to go, you're there when you're supposed to be there, and you do what you're told to do. That being said, the Bruins, a couple of things. One thing in particular that I think the Bruins could really use at times is more of a dump-in. Now, I'm not a dump-and-run guy, but I can't stand to see any team, whether it's the Bruins or another team, forcing the puck up through the neutral zone. As forwards, you need to recognize when there's nothing there, not force that pass, and throw it in. And when you throw it in, you got to give that defenseman a bump because, if you bump them guys long enough, they're not swinging the net, head up, getting a couple of good strides, getting that puck into the sweet zone to rifle out a 60-foot pass. They're letting that puck go a little tight to the body, a little too far away, and they haven't done that a lot at all this year. I'd like to see them do that.
Jack, thank you for the call. I think it's a good point.
It is a good point.
The Bruins have gotten so skilled that we are now saying to them,
they don't dump and chase enough.
Dump and chase. Like, our whole lives is a dump and chase team. Now they have this beautifully skilled team with the puck possession and passing. But I think that also leads to all these turnovers. You know, they're trying to make the extra pass. They're trying to do these no-look passes. They're throwing it behind them. They're trying to find the guy that's... And when it works, it's like a thing of beauty. It's like, whoa! But you're also turning the puck over and they're going the other way. So, you know, another way to say that is to simplify. Dump it in there and go get it. Like, the Bergeron line did that on that last Toronto goal, and it was...
Pasternak.
Yeah, right? So it's like, simplify, dump it in there. I'm with you on that.
I mean, to me, you take what's there. If they take away things that you're more comfortable doing, then you got to rely on something else. But they look, it happened in the Toronto series, too. They started to try to stick handle through guys, make passes they shouldn't make, and it didn't work, and they had to adjust.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blunt force trauma to run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Wrist it into the right corner. He was one on four. We got a chop.
Yeah, it's going to be a chop on Krug.
It looked like from the replay we had that Krug chopped him on the knee. Not hard.
Posse speed. Gord. Score! Yanni Gord! Power play goal for the Lightning. It's 1-0.
That's a big, big goal.
Pasternak shoots, and it goes off the post.
And then Hedman cleared it just before Marchand could get to it.
Marchand wheels in around a check to the far circle. It's centered. McAvoy shoots. He scores!
High slot Johnson. Shoots! Score! Score! Johnson said, you want to knock me down? No call of the interference. No problem. I'm still going to stick it in your net. 2-1 Lightning!
And Bergeron able to win it. High slot. We got a penalty here on the Bruins.
It's going to go to Pasternak.
4-minute minor, but
it was his own stick. And the shaft of Hedman's stick got him, hit him under the shield.
Let's go, Pallad. Score!
Pallad! The Bruins put it back into their own end! Otherwise, it would have been offside.
They score off the drop. And Krug was the guy who fired it in. Up the middle, here's Marchand with a step into the slot. He got pawed at. No call.
Stroman just hacked the hand of Brad Marchand on that breakaway. Caught him on the lower hand as he's coming in there.
Point out to center ice. Point to the red line. Shoots it toward the open net. Score! 4 points for Braden Point. Wow. And it's 4-2 Lightning with 25.2 seconds left.
Obviously, we were able to finish better game one. They started really well tonight. Clearly, we're the better team the first 10 minutes. You know, our goaltender held us in.
A slash up around the hands, I mean, that's automatic.
That was a look back at game two. Game three tonight, right here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. 7 o'clock puck drop, 6:30, Dunkin' Donuts pregame. Murray's developing a new hatred for the Tampa Bay Lightning based solely on their play-by-play man.
It's too much. And I even heard, you know, I heard Beadle playing some of the audio of it. We were doing it yesterday. It's just that one particular call. Stick it in your net! Like, enough. Like, please. No. It's too much. There's a line. He's going over it.
He takes it personally. It's like, no, really. It's like someone stole his wallet.
You want to knock me down? No call of the interference? No problem! I'm still going to stick it in your net!
That's the cadence, tonality, and just that it sounds just like every bad drunk at any bad bar ever. Like that's way too into the game, and I've been that guy, and I'm hateable at that point. So to hear that as a broadcaster, like rein it in, buddy. I wish I was that guy's boss so I could yell at him.
I told you, it's like the guy we play on Thanksgiving in the who was it, a college game? Wright Waters. Oh, yeah. Where's Wright Waters?
No,
I don't care. That's what any one of you says. That's a flag. And I will fight every one of them.
we should add that to the high school football deal. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. Like, to the point where it's hilarious. Like, you can't help but laugh. He takes it so personally.
Okay, Bruins and Brady not working out with his teammates, and there's footballs out.
Ah, there. Take that, Reimer, you bum.
Yeah, I've been that guy.
I'm still going to stick it in your net!
Jason in Cumberland. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, guys. I don't know why we're focusing so much on Brady. I've tuned in numerous days to hear you talk about the Bruins, hopefully, or the other playoff team, and it's all this nonsense soap opera. Every day it's Gronk with a tweet. What does it mean? Brady isn't. Who cares? The Patriots are nothing but days of our lives right now. Let's focus on the games. We got two teams in the second round, one of which beat up the MASS unit, and are far more interesting than trying to decipher all this nonsense in this phony pretty boy who's married to that overrated model and all the other dopes in Route 1. I mean, enough already. And I know you're sitting there, Felger, with your little beard trying to dissect this, but focus on, start the show one time with the Bruins or the Celtics and not some dumb cryptic message from the Patriots. Thank you.
Okay. So, I mean, I keep saying I don't feel... I need to defend this. It's the most important athlete of our time. In the country, never mind here, who was hinting retirement and is at odds with the greatest coach of all time. So, to me, that's a story that deserves coverage, and we're going to keep covering it. I'm sorry. It just is.
He is the Michael Jordan of football.
But we're happy to talk about the other things if you want to call and talk about them. Like Steve in the car wants to talk Bruins Lightning, so go ahead, Steve.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking the call. Hey, I was just down there for the weekend down in Tampa, and I ended up scoring a ticket on the street for a club called the Chase Club. So I go up there, you know, I got my Bruins T-shirt on, and I show the ticket, and the lady goes, oh, you can't wear that shirt in here. I go, you're kidding me, right? She goes, nope, you got to take it off. I go, why? She goes, well, we'll give you a shirt. So she gives me a long-sleeve shirt. I have to go into the men's room, take my shirt off, then put that one on, and had to give it back to her, and she had to hold it to the end of the game.
Right, so, like...
It. I mean, yeah, I know. It's money for it.
Steve, thanks for the call. I don't care. Like, I know a lot of people spent time on the... You got to change your shirt in Tampa. It's true. I don't care.
It does prove that it's a Mickey Mouse minor league town.
So, look, I mean, that's the point. Thank God we live in a city where we don't have to limit tickets to outsiders, and we don't have to tell them what to wear to our stadiums. Because that is the rest of the country. Or a lot of the, it's not all the country. It's, you know, a good portion of the country has to do that sort of thing. They have to limit tickets to the opponent, or they have to tell you what you can wear, or they have to worry about opposing cheers drowning out their cheers. And we live in a place where that doesn't exist and pretty much has never existed.
No, what exists here is, yeah, sure, show up wearing a Montreal Canadiens jersey. Good luck.
Yeah, the only time I can remember ever getting close to something like that was the Bruins had reached a point where they, you know, were so lacking here locally that when they did finally make the playoffs in 08 and they played the Canadiens, there must have been board space available because Montreal pizza restaurants took out ads on the garden boards.
Oh, no kidding.
So it'd be like, you know, La Pizza, 7766, you know, St. Catherine Avenue, whatever. Like, so there were some Montreal pizza ads on the boards at the garden. And I remember being at the game and being like, that's a bad look, man. That makes us Orlando. But that's it. That lasted for like 2 minutes, and that's it. So just thank your lucky stars. That's not where we live, and that's not what it's about here.
Le pizza.
Here's Jim in Wakefield on the Bees. Go ahead, Jim.
How are you guys doing tonight? I never thought I'd find myself calling in twice in the same week, but I got one question for Tony Maserati, and then I can get on to the Rask. I look in the Herald today, and we're in the middle of the second round of the hockey playoffs. Why is there only a half a page of hockey and the rest is 42 pages of Boston Red Sox?
Oh, Jim, don't get me started on the newspaper coverage of the Bruins this playoffs. I've got a whole thing. I got an hour for you on that.
Why is that just a question for me? You work for the Herald.
I don't know. I was at the Herald for 19 years. Mean,
you do work for the Herald, right, Tony?
Not anymore. I even worked for the Herald for almost 10 years.
Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry then. Well, let me get to the right last point. The other time I called in, I mean, you say he's an elite goalie and stuff. I mean, he makes saves where he's not supposed to be making saves. And he's letting pucks in that he's not supposed to let in. I think one of these games, you're going to see him swimming in his own feces one of these times. And then it's going to get real ugly.
Yes, it is. Well, let's hope not. You know, thoughts and prayers to the Bull Gang, if that's the case. Rask has been good this series. He's been good. If he plays like this, they can win this series. If he plays like this, they can win the Cup. I mean, I'll say that. If they get that kind of goaltending, and I think they also need secondary scoring, which they, you know, didn't get last game. If they can get Rask to play like that consistently, they've got a chance. The question is, can he play like that consistently?
I mean, I'm trying to think, but the only goal that I really had any sort of problem with was that second one in the last game.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, look, you're never going to go 100%. I mean, rarely, right? Like, and there are going to be plenty of nights where you make five great saves and then let up a softie. That happens, too. I get it. It's really, to me, about the overall wire-to-wire, what does he look like? And in the first two games, he has looked pretty good.
Mike in the car, what are your thoughts on Bill Belichick?
Listen, guys, Brady has played this masterfully. He has painted Belichick in a corner. Belichick's the ultimate results guy, only do what's in the best interest of the team. Results only matter. Well, Guerrero was getting his quarterback, a 40-year-old quarterback, to play pretty well. His tight end healthy for the first time in a while. He's gone. His boss, Belichick's boss, tells him, do your job. I want Garoppolo gone. He gets nothing for him. And then he does what he does with Butler in the Super Bowl. Results matter. Brady paints him in a quarter. I'm doing my job. You're not doing yours. And not only that, they're borderline asinine decisions that nobody gets any explanations for. So Belichick is dying at the altar that he created.
So dying is a little strong, but the loss really hurts Belichick in all this.
Oh, it sure does. I mean, just to have it go down the way it did. Again, if you are going to build your whole platform on the team trumps all and winning trumps all and that I'm doing what's best for the team, and then you put a personal grudge ahead and it helps cost you a game, okay, helps, what leg do you have to stand on?
And I would also put the Garoppolo trade on that list. Just because, you know, in the same...
He undersold.
It's the same side. It's a different side of the same coin, which is it was personal with Butler. He held a grudge, and he didn't like the guy. The kid wasn't on his... He wasn't one of his guys. And so, screw you, sit. He really liked Garoppolo and wanted to take care of him, so he kept him out of Cleveland and hurt the team in the same breath. So it's the same story.
Absolutely fair.
And those are two things that hurt Belichick. I don't think there's any question about it. Here's Murray's update. We'll give you a Celtics minute. I see at least one Celtics call on the board right now. A Celtics minute right after this.
Felger and Maz.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Imagine any developing Celtics opinions?
So I think that the Celtics in this series are the lesser talented team. Philly, to me, has more talent. Philly's deeper. And so I don't think you're going to be able to go through this series like you did against Milwaukee and win every home game. And I think that this might be the one where really you get to see that. So to me, this is an important game now for Philly. Like, again, you don't want to get two down. I think you're going to get Philly's best in game two tomorrow. I do. And so the Celtics are going to have to win a road game in this series if they want to win it, which is why I think if they want to have a shot at winning the series, to me the Celtics are going to win, you know, win all the ones at home, really. Because based on what I saw in Milwaukee, I don't know if the Celtics are going to be able to win in Philadelphia. That to me is, you know, I don't love their chances in this series, period.
To me, my takeaway is just the thought. The Celtics strategy in game one, right? Give them the two, take away the three. And it definitely worked. Why is that, like, why wouldn't Philly just say, hell yeah, we'll take the two. Let's just make all of our twos.
Well, they might. If they play better defense, they might.
And so, I mean, so the Celtics are willing to give up easy baskets, ostensibly. Easy baskets to Joel Embiid and Simmons and whatnot. So why wouldn't Philly just take them? Forget the three.
Well, in the second half, they did a little bit more. And in the third quarter, they did. In fact, they started posting Embiid, dumping the ball in. Embiid had a big third quarter. And Stevens actually talked about this on the midday show today when he did his weekly interview with Beadle and Zoe. And he said, you know, we didn't double-team Embiid, but we're up 10 or 12. So we'll give you the two now. But if Philly can get some sort of lead and then all of a sudden just keep attacking, then all of a sudden the Celtics' defense has to change. And so now what I don't know is whether Stevens was playing a game there as if to say, you know, yeah, you know, the double team on Embiid and Simmons and that sort of stuff is still in play. It just depends on the situation because he's trying to plan it in Philly's head that they still may double team. But as long as the Celtics can get out in front, they're not going to do that. I don't think.
Just as a quick side note, I'm glad they're being cautious with Jaylen Brown. I mean, this thing is like a week or two injury that he's dealing with.
So what?
And it sounded like, well, he practiced today, and he's still dealt for tomorrow. He ain't going to play tomorrow night. I'd be shocked. He's pushing it. Sounds like they want to hold him back, and that's smart.
You're saying he did not practice?
No, he did practice this morning, and they're going to go through a shoot-around tomorrow. But I think that based on everything I'm reading, they're holding him back. He wants to play, and they should be holding him back.
Do you think it would be the same if they lost game one?
No, probably not.
See, so I think this affords him a little time.
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't know. Maybe with Brown, they can win in Philly. I guess what I'm saying is... A hamstring injury.
They put him out there tomorrow night. They're going to re-injure the thing in 5 minutes.
I'll be surprised if the Celtics win all four games at home in this series, but it might be their only shot.
Here's Mike in Arizona. What do you got, Mike?
Thanks for taking the call, guys. Matt, I agree with everything you're saying, but I want to talk about Terry Rozier. I think this year, I mean, he's going to be a huge trade chip for the Celtics going forward, but if you go back to the 2015 draft, I mean, Jimmy Stewart can break it down for you, but looking at that now, he's so critical of that pick, but he is top four or five pick in that draft with hindsight.
Okay. So first, Matt, and I'm going to look up the 2014 draft right now. This is a benefit. Even if they lose, Terry Rozier has increased his value as a trade chip.
No question.
Right?
Yes, he has.
And that's, you know, this is something that we talked about. This is a tangible benefit. You know, this is something that the Celtics can gain on.
Yes, no question about it. In fact, I mean...
You could say the same thing about Jason Tatum if they wanted to dangle him out for someone like Anthony Davis if he was still available. And that 28 he got the other night, that was a big boy game from him.
So this Rozier performance, again, the number that sticks out to me is the three-point percentage. You know, he's shooting 43.5% or whatever it is, 436, 44%. From three-point land, he shot 38 during the regular season, which is good, but that is also in a complementary role, right? So maybe he's a little more open in this case, and also who's he playing against? But here in the postseason, you're playing against – he's a starter. He's playing against frontline players. He's shooting 44%.
What year was he drafted?
2015.
15. Thank you.
I have it in front of me if you want to know who was in that draft.
Okay, but you know what I'd like to do? Because you know the league better and you guys are the basketball guys. I want to ask you. Okay, you know where if we redraft it, where would you take him? So let me go through the draft. Okay,
hey, yep, sure.
Until I get to Rozier, who's taken 16th overall. Karl Anthony Towns or Rozier?
Karl Anthony Towns.
D'Angelo Russell or Rozier?
Rozier.
Jimmy Stewart?
Rozier.
Really?
D'Angelo Russell kind of sucks.
That one's done.
Yeah, feels it.
Okay,
I don't know if it's done, but. If you're talking about the Rozier we've seen in the last...
No. You don't get to do that.
I don't need the last couple of games.
What Rozier? No, including the three road games in Milwaukee where he sucked.
Fine. I'm still going Rozier over.
Okay, like, I mean, if we're going off just what he did in the last 10 minutes, like, no. What he is as a player.
No.
Coin flip.
Rozier.
Over D'Angelo Russell and Rozier?
Coin flip, yeah.
Okay, like, don't overrate him over the last home game.
Okay.
Factor in all those road games where he blew.
I got it.
Russell, tremendous talent, won't pan out to... Jack Bleep.
Okay, fine. So that's the balance of the panel there. Rozier wins that one. Jahlil Okafor.
He's a bum. Rozier.
Rozier.
Okay,
Rozier.
Porzingis.
Zinger.
Zinger.
Porzingis.
There's two.
Mario Hezonja.
Rozier.
No. Rozier. Rozier.
Cauley-Stein.
Rozier.
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 Emmanuel Mudiay.
It's close.
Rozier though.
It's close. To me, that probably another coin flip.
Rozier, but it's close.
Stanley Johnson with Detroit.
Rozier.
Yeah.
Frank the Tank Kaminsky in Charlotte.
Rozier.
Rozier.
Thanks.
Justice Winslow.
Ooh.
Rozier.
Yeah, it's close, but Rozier.
See, I'd go Winslow there.
Isn't it Winslow?
Winslow hasn't had a good start to his career, but to me, there's still a lot of problems.
Winslow's been mediocre on defense, and his offense is atrocious in spots.
Miles Turner.
Ooh.
Miles Turner, no question.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's three you would take ahead of Rozier. Trey Lyles.
Rozier.
Devin Booker with
Booker.
The Suns.
Booker.
Okay,
Booker.
So there's four you'd take ahead of Rozier. Cameron Payne.
Rozier.
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 Kelly Oubre.
Rozier.
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 Okay, there's Terry Rozier at 16. So
Rozier.
On our board, he'd be fifth. Right now.
That makes sense.
Rozier would be the fifth player taken. Well, no. I'm sorry. How about guys after him? Rashad Vaughn with the Bucks. I don't even know him. Sam Decker? Nope. Jerian Grant with the Wizards? No. Dellen Wright? Toronto? No. Justin Anderson? Bobby Portis?
Bobby Portis you can maybe make a case for.
No. I like Rozier better.
Okay. Hollis Jefferson with Portland?
No.
Tyus Jones? Jarrell Martin?
No. No, none of these guys.
Mudaliv? Larry Nance Jr.?
No.
No, I'm telling you, he's in the top six or seven in the draft.
He is.
He's in the top six or seven in the draft. I don't think that's wrong to put him somewhere in that area. He's not in the top three.
Oh, wait, I found a guy. Jordan Mickey at 33. Yeah, I would have him ahead of
him. Okay.
Okay,
so fine. It was a good draft pick. What does that mean?
What does it mean that he was a good draft pick?
Yeah.
Nothing.
It means referencing the fact that Jones and the Dearly Departed booed the pick and encouraged the crowd to boo the pick that did.
They did. They hated it that night. Do you remember? Do you remember that?
God bless. And they were at the party, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. They hated it. Oh,
the response you hear in the background, that is the right response. You should boo this pick.
I still take Marcus Smart over him.
So Smart was here before, and then Rozier, and that's what everyone was pissed about. They keep taking point guards.
I take Marcus Smart over him still. I still do. I mean, and Rozier seems like a fine player, but you just, like, he's benefiting a little bit from the thing that, this, you know, someone's got to play point, someone's got to take the shots, like that sort of thing. But then when he's gone on the road, he's been caca. Same thing. Marcus Smart's stuff travels on the road.
Well, there's no question his defense travels better. But Rozier's made some big shots in this building. And, you know, not everybody does that either. So I told you, I think Rozier's skill set is more valuable, but Smart's probably a better fit for their team.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Two down and a 1-2 from Kimbrel. He got him. He blew him away in 98, and the Red Sox win it by a final score of 5-4.
They haven't been playing very well, Mass.
No, they haven't. Look, they've lost 6 out of their last 10 going into today. Now, again, they won. But, you know, that start was so great that it almost rendered this little stretch meaningless. And I think that over the last, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks, you have started to see a lot of the flaws that we thought might be there. And so for those of you that were concerned about the back end of the rotation, Drew Pomeranz got off to a dreadful start again today. He'd been bad in his first two. He gave up 3 runs in the first 2 innings today. Now he straightened out after that, but the infield defense has been bad. They're still making some mistakes on the bases. You know, there's a hole in that bullpen. Like, all of those things are still there. And so, you know, the Yankees played very well over that period of time. And now all of a sudden, you know, the division looks a lot tighter again. And I would just tell you that it could be a situation where 95 wins doesn't get you the division. You might need 98, 99, even 100.
The 2-game lead going into today?
It is. Yep. But the Yankees are on a 100-win pace, too. So the point is, if you slip up somewhere along the line because the division's so bad, Baltimore's dreadful, Tampa Bay's bad, you know, Toronto's okay, but even then, over the long term, I think that'll fade. If you don't, if you slip up even a little bit, you might find yourself in that play-in game.
So last night was ugly. You know, nothing else on. I was able to sample a good part of the game. Brutal infield defense. What I thought was the biggest Mickey Mouse little league gaffe that I've seen in a while, where they allowed the Royals to score on a double steal. There's 2 outs. Man on first, runner on third. Like little league. The runner on first takes off. You throw it to second. The guy from third comes in the back door. Boom. And even, you know, with 2 outs, even, I feel like it's even worse.
It is worse with 2 outs.
And the Royals completed it so easily, it wasn't even funny.
Because you're giving away a run. Like, if there's 1 out, you almost say, well, at the, you know, the trade-off is almost, let's just get out of the inning with 1 run, minimize the damage, we'll take the second out and clean the bases, and fine, we go on. With 2 outs, and Cora himself said this, we got to cut down the run at the plate. The goal there is to cut down the run at the plate.
Of course. Like, I mean, it's not even close.
So there are occasions where you would trade a run for an out, but that wasn't one of them.
Right.
I mean, you're up 6-2, fine. We'll give you the run, we'll take the out. Like, but that? No, that was a mistake. And I think Devers is an adventure at third base. He's become an adventure again. And I don't even think he's a worse infielder. I think Nunez is worse. So you can go by the error totals all you want. Nunez can't move. And when he gets to the ball, half the time he can't field it. So I think their defense at second base has sucked. It's been really bad. And, you know, Devers at least makes a good play and then a bad one. There's inconsistency to his defense. Their defense at second base feels bad to me all the time.
Okay, so that wretched game last night happens, and they lose it, and Alex Cora comes into the post-game press conference and does this right out of the chute, Jimmy. Play Alex Cora from last night, please.
It's all about defense.
Awful, awful. Yeah, that was a horrible game. Yeah, yeah. We were lucky we were playing 13 innings, honestly. That was bad. Mental mistakes, physical mistakes, all kinds of mistakes. That was awful.
Okay.
Don't you love it?
Oh, my God. Loved it.
Don't you love it? So I'll tell you, I'm starting to believe in this whole Cora thing, because when a manager talks like that after a game, it tells me he's communicating with his players. They know not to take it personally. And with Farrell, now you know that part of the reason he was so careful and walking on eggshells, the way he walked on eggshells, is because he was afraid to talk to them face-to-face, for crying out loud, because they might take it the wrong way. So the whole communication thing was a problem. In the case of Cora, you could totally see him going in there saying, guys, we suck tonight, huh? Okay, sits in the press conference. Yeah, we were terrible. What do you want me to tell you? And really? What's the big deal? So what? If you're sensitive about that and you're a pro athlete, you're missing the point. It happens. You have bad nights. The ability to sort of acknowledge it as such is part of the deal if you're a half-decent team. It tells me right now they're pretty healthy in there.
Well, and they responded today. They win, except, you know, there was more crap in the infield, and it took three home runs from Mookie Betts, and Kansas City just continued to throw them right down the middle for them to win the game. But, you know, it's not like they went from bad to worse, so it's not like, you know, Alex Cora just telling the truth sent them into the fetal position or anything.
No, and, you know, Devers, again, misplayed at A. I don't think he was charged with an error, but which I don't understand, because I watched the play, and I don't know how he wasn't charged with an error. The ball went under his glove. And this even goes back to, I don't know if you saw the play that, I think it was it in Oakland, that inside the park home run,
yeah,
that Jackie Bradley completely botched? Like, I looked at that play and went, how the hell does that not get an error? So my point is this, whatever the metrics are, their defense is worse. Okay, because that was a bad play by Devers. Nunez, I don't think, got an error last night. That was an error. The ball in center field with Bradley, that was an error. Their defense has been wretched. Really, particularly in the infield.
The inside the park home run is not an error because he doesn't touch the ball. If you don't touch the ball, it's not an error, Murray. So it could be a pop-up that's coming right to you, and all you got to do is step to the side and not touch it, and they won't give you an error.
But isn't that laughable?
It's laughable!
So again, I'll just tell you that their start was so good, and this is part of the reason that every win counts, because you're going to go through a stretch where you're not playing that great. But if this is closer to what they are, that's it's not going to be anywhere near good enough.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub.